Part 11. The Guns, the Women, the Ego. Chapter 1. Tommy. The maddening tale of the fork and the dishwasher is related. I thought she was the funniest girl on the planet. She should have been a comedian. She was nonstop action, talking faster than any girl I knew. Basically, she was a maniac, and I fucking flipped out over her. The first night we spent together was during time off from the Karabi tour. She lived in Reseda with her daughter Taylor from her marriage to Warrant singer Janie Lane. I remember seeing the video for Cherry Pie and thinking she was the hottest chick on wheels. She had perfect blonde hair, huge doe eyes, big glossy lips, and huge tits. Who cared whether it was all real or not? Her name was Bobby Brown, and she stole my heart the second she opened her mouth. I was sleeping in her bed after our first date at about 4 in the morning when all of a sudden the frame started shaking. I had no idea what was going on. At first I thought it was some kind of crazy dream, then I thought some dude was trying to break in. As I slowly returned to consciousness, I realized the whole house was just pounding. We lay naked in her bed, not sure what to do, when suddenly her armoire came crashing to the ground, shattering the screen of her TV into 1,000 little pieces. "Taylor!" Bobby suddenly cried. Her daughter was alone on the other side of the house, and who knew what was going on there? We slithered off the bed and dropped to the ground, almost shitting in our pants. We pushed open the door and went into the hallway. Everything was falling onto the floor, and the house was shaking so badly we kept getting thrown against the walls as we tried to crawl. The closer we came to Taylor's door, the more the house rattled, until it seemed like it was about to just fucking collapse. As we reached her room, I looked behind me and the whole house ripped apart. The kitchen and the living room just completely split off and disappeared, leaving a gaping hole of darkness. I was sure we were going to die. Taylor was on the floor, crying as the earthquake tossed her around the room. I grabbed her and yelled, "Fuck, let's go for it!" Then Bobby and I ran out of the room and toward the front door, careful not to get thrown onto the open side of the house and whatever abyss was waiting below. The front door was gone, so we ran through the space where it used to be and into the street. Outside, the earth slowed to a tremble, and we joined her neighbors, who were crying over the remains of their homes. After a first date like that, there was no going back. Bobby and Taylor moved into my pad on the beach, and after 6 months of partying together, I slipped a $15,000 engagement ring onto the top of a brownie she had ordered in a diner, then got down on my knees and asked her to marry me. She said yes, and that was when everything started to go downhill. But it rolled downhill slowly, so slowly that I hardly even noticed it. Scott Humphrey was over one day listening to some music I was writing, and Bobby snapped at me because I hadn't washed the hair out of the sink after I shaved or something. "Hey, dude," Scott said, "do you let her talk to you like that?" "What do you mean?" I asked him. "She's not even treating you like a human being. Is she always like this?" "Well, yeah," I said. And all of a sudden, those love blinders came off, and I started to notice things I never had before. Things about her just seemed off. She'd sneak around the house, hide things from me, disappear on strange errands, receive phone calls from guys I didn't know, and when I woke up in the morning, she usually wouldn't be in bed. Now, any other guy would think she was cheating on him, but I knew Bobby better than that. With the love goggles off, I also noticed that she was wasting away, and she was always fucking cranky. Sometimes I would come home from tour or the studio, and she'd be sitting on the floor with all these arts and crafts spread around her. She'd be hot gluing fruits and flowers together or covering a bowl of potpourri with gold spray paint. The next time I was alone with one of her friends, I asked her, "Dude, is Bobby doing fucking speed?"
"I'm not gonna answer that," she said. "But why don't you look in her purse or check her makeup bag? And remember, we never spoke."
Sure enough, I grabbed her purse and found fucking speed in there. It made everything in our relationship seem like bullshit, and it explained the crazy random mood swings that I was always a victim of. When I confronted her, she denied it at first. Then she attacked me for drinking, then she blamed it on me. The end result was a huge fucking fight that ended with me sleeping on the floor like a dog. After that, all this deep-seated resentment that had been building up in Bobby started to pour out daily. Everything I'd begun thinking about her, she had simultaneously been thinking about me. She felt that I was the one going through mood swings, that I'd become cranky, suspicious, and miserable to live with, and that I was sneaking around behind her back, not with drugs, but with other women. She was especially mad because she felt like I had asked her to give up her acting and modeling career because I was so scarred from my marriage with Heather and wanted children and a full-time wife. After a while, whenever Heather called, because we had remained friends, Bobby would freak her shit. And whenever a guy called for her, I'd flip out. A few days before Christmas, when I wanted to go out to a holiday party, our mutual jealousies and mistrust exploded in an ugly, out-of-hand fight in front of Taylor. We were fighting every day by then, and that couldn't have been good for Taylor's development, let alone mine. I tried to think of a single reason why she should stay in my life, and I couldn't think of one. Even her sense of humor, which I had originally loved about her, had disappeared as our relationship became all about negativity and accusations. When I asked her to leave, she threw a fit and said she wasn't going anywhere without her clothing and furniture and shit. "You know what?" I told her. "You can have your stuff when you give me back my engagement ring, because we ain't getting fucking married. That's for damn sure." "Drop dead," she spat, adding about 100 rapid-fire oaths on top of it. "Well then, you ain't getting your shit." And with that, I grabbed her and marched her to the door. Strangely, I didn't have to force her. She went a little too willingly, it seemed. I was surprised that she didn't put up more of a fight, because she was a fucking fighter. An hour later, there was a loud knocking on my front door. I looked at the security monitor, and she was standing there with the fucking cops. I figured the cops would be fair since the house was mine and I had the right to ask her to get off my property. But I was wrong. Way wrong. She had used all her powers to conjure up the greatest sob story the cops had ever heard. She set me up. "Mr. Lee," the officer said on the intercom, "you are going to have to let her in to collect her things." "Dude," I protested, "she's got my ring." "That's not my concern," he said. "She needs to come in and remove her possessions." I threw up my hands and opened the fucking door. The cop barged in, followed by Bobby. She marched straight to the bedroom. I tried to follow her, but the cop stopped me. "Don't go in there." I lost it.
"What do you mean, don't go in there? That's my fucking bedroom, and that's my personal stuff in there."
"I want you to wait outside and keep quiet."
"This is bullshit. I'm not gonna do shit to her."
"Did you hear what I said, Mr. Lee?"
"I fucking heard you. I just want to make sure she doesn't take any of my stuff. I have that right, don't I?"
I guess I didn't have that right, because before I knew it, I was thrown to the ground, handcuffed, and pushed into the back of their cop car.
"What are you taking me to jail for?"
I yelled as they drove away. "Assault."
"What?"
"The lady says you tried to strangle her." Since it was a Friday night, they kept me there for the rest of the weekend, which gave Bobby just enough time to clean my entire fucking place out. When I came home Monday morning to find all the rooms empty, chairs, tables, bed, everything, I wasn't even surprised. I was just curious as to where she'd found a moving company willing to work on weekends. I hope she had to pay them some serious overtime, because I know they worked hard. All they left me was one fork in the dishwasher. But here's a sick thing about love. I fucking missed her. And she was totally missing me too. So just days after I was released from jail, I found myself in the apartment she had rented after leaving my house. Fucking her on my old bed, dude. We weren't really going out again, but we weren't quite broken up either. It turned into one of those relationships that just needs to be shot and put out of its fucking misery. We were holding each other back from life, from meeting other people. But at the same time, we couldn't get enough of each other. The second or third time we hooked up after jail, she started bitching me out because she thought I was interested in one of her hot friends. She stomped and screamed around the house for fucking hours without a break. I tried to laugh it off, and it only made her madder. I tried to ignore her, and it only incensed her more. I tried to reason with her, and she just grew angrier. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore. I didn't know how to stop the noise. I grabbed a fucking vase off the table, smashed it on the ground, said, "You're a fucking asshole," and split. I was so upset. I couldn't get rid of this crazy fucking woman or my crazy fucking feelings for her, and nothing was working. I needed to escape from this shit, get my mind off it, stop the noise. Why was I still even wasting my time on this bitch who had set me up? So I went to visit a friend named Sedge, who was a full-on fucking Nikki Sixx junkie. When I walked in, he was sitting on the sofa juicing up.
"Hey, bro, hook me up," I begged. "I don't want to feel a fucking thing right now."
"No problem," he said, rubbing his fingers together in what would have been a snap if he wasn't too junked out to generate enough friction. I rolled up my sleeve, tied myself off with a piece of medical rubber tubing on the table, and waited for him to prepare the syringe. I saw him lower it into a spoon and draw 2 cc's.
"Bro, I'm not like you," I told him. "I don't do this all the time. That might be too much for me."
"Nah, don't worry about it," he half-snapped. "It's fine. Trust me, dude. I'm a junkie. I know what I'm doing."
"Fuck it. Whatever."
Those words, "Trust me, I'm a junkie," should have been a clue right there. I mean, he was a fucking addict, dude, so of course his tolerance was going to be more than mine. He stabbed my arm, released the 2 cc's into my system, pulled the needle out, and untied me. I entered fucking paradise. I was so fucking happy. I didn't feel a thing. My body relaxed, the words Bobby and Brown disappeared from my consciousness, and a stream of pleasure shot out from my heart and flooded my body. I dropped back into the couch and closed my eyes.